You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware,
IGN GameScoop. This is a pretty good story, though.
Finish your thoughts.
It's really short.
All right.
Walking by CCFF, catching Pokemon, and I saw the big cat like being fed by a woman, and I was like, oh, there's another cat. And the cat just like turned around really suddenly, and it was a skunk, and it aimed its ass at us like right on the sidewalk, and it was like splayed its fur way out and like big white splay, and it was just looking at us like this. It just wanted
to
spray us.
The woman was feeding the skunk?
No, the woman was feeding a cat, and so we were like, oh, there's another cat. It was like, ah!
And you like move very slowly.
No, we just kept walking, and like the skunk kept like shifting its butt, like following us. Yeah, welcome to the GameScoop, everybody.
Man, how long would you have to take off for that?
No, I'd come in. You guys
we'd be taking off. All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis,
Scoop.
Jared Petty,
Scoop.
And Sam Claiborne.
I'm back. It's been so long.
Back by popular demand. People were asking about you.
And you heard what happened, right?
Well,
so what happened was I grew this big beard, and Damon was like, no beards.
Yep.
No beards at all.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Except we only have one. Only one.
I thought the GameScoop fans would be very proud of
it. It's not
the
beard,
It's
no beards.
Yeah, so once that's right. Once enough. Yeah. The cheese stands alone.
That's absolutely right. Got a great show for you this week. It's a little bit of a slower news week, but that means there's more time for reader mail.
Woo!
More time for the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Let's check in with the listeners right off the bat. We've got another crazy fan theory.
Wow.
Oh.
Which I know Sam likes.
Yeah.
We're going to open up with a crazy fan theory from Nick Zapka. He emailed us at the
email
address.
And the mothers of invention?
Gamescoop@IGN.com, just
Moon
like
unit.
You can. And, no, Zapka.
Oh.
Oh, okay. I heard Zapka.
Still sounds like a good conspiracy name.
Yeah.
Smoke on the water, fire in
Nick says, I was listening to various IGN podcasts and came up with an idea that I haven't heard anyone discuss yet. The idea being the reasoning behind the increase in price in PlayStation's subscription service.
Mm.
Next month, starting tomorrow, September, PlayStation Plus is increasing in price. I think it's like $10 a year.
$50 to $60 annually.
Like that, So he has a theory as to why they're raising the price. Yeah.
The price of plastic went up. And so those little cards you have to get your codes on are just that much more expensive.
That's because Sony wants to make more money.
That's not his theory. His theory is, what if the reason for the $10 price hike was to compensate for a late game change in the Neo's hardware? I know it's unlikely that they could have made any changes, but who knows? I expect if any company could make a change like this, it would be Sony. Makes perfect sense, seeing that Microsoft partially showed their hand in the future console war. Let's hear what you guys think of this idea. So he's thinking, Sony had their Neo set, and then Microsoft announced the Scorpio, most powerful console of all time. So in order to better compete with that, they needed to upgrade the Neo, and they needed more money for that, so that's why they're raising the price for PlayStation Plus.
Oh, so it's an economic play. They're like, how are we going to get 10 bucks from 25,000 people really
fast? PlayStation Plus subscribers are going to subsidize the cost of the PlayStation Neo.
They said, we need $200 million more dollars to upgrade the Neo. Where can we get that kind of cash? Mm. Someone said, if only we could get $10 more from 2 million people.
Yeah. It's more like 20 million people that subscribe to PS Plus now, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I guess my math didn't
quite That is good money.
Yep.
Sony's a really big company. They probably have like some kind of taxi cab business and some kind of, baseball card business. In Japan, who knows what they're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some subsidiary.
I don't think their big source of income is, even to this day,
they own a bunch of grocery stores or something weird.
Yeah.
But within Sony Computer Entertainment and each of its divisions, people are making these kinds of projections per year and looking at all the different streams of revenue they have at some level. I don't think that there was some kind of last second change to the Neo, because trying to do last second tweaks to popular hardware is pretty much never worked out in the history of computing. I think the only time I can ever think that it did was when they threw the C64 together in like 2 months, which was way more primitive. I don't think you can do that now. So no, I don't think it's any kind of last second reaction. Could it be a cost offsetting measure in a broad budget sense, where they're just trying to figure out how much money they expect to make in a year? Sort of, but I don't think it was just that line A plus line D kind of thing. I think these formulas that are used for all the income streams going into Computer Entertainment America, Japan, and Europe are going to be made with considerations that none of the four of us here can even dream of.
That's true.
Well, you also have to consider that Sony is, a publicly traded company, and just because they make, however many millions of dollars from, a $10 increase in PSN, that doesn't mean that you just have, hey, we got more money to spend, everybody. Like, that's profit until you spend it on something internally. So you need to be able to prove, if you're going to raise $30 million, if you're going to spend $30 million more, you need to prove that that'll pay off for you in the long run.
Yeah, that's true. They're running, they have this whole business, the whole PlayStation business, and I think they're just looking at the operating costs of the business. Somewhere in that pipeline, more cash flow is needed.
I mean, I think someone somewhere figured out, someone said, wait a second, Xbox Live Gold is $60 a year, and we're $50 a year. That's stupid.
Maybe they just realized they had an opportunity.
Maybe the cost of the subscription service the whole time should have been $60, but they needed to build those up to the size of Xbox.
Yeah.
That's true. 50,
so they were being competitive for a little bit, and now they're going up to the we're not going to lose money anymore price.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just as simple as what Justin said at the beginning. There's like, oh, we can make more money and we can get away with this. And
I mean, I think Sam's probably closest of all. Like, PS Plus was always this weird sort of dicey thing compared to Xbox Live Gold, which is, it's a perception thing, but the perception is that Xbox Live Gold is so baked into Xbox and has been since the launch of the 360. PS Plus came later. For a long time, you didn't need it to play games online, and it was dicey when they made that switch. Yeah. So to grease the wheel and keep people on board with that service, they probably thought it made sense to make it a little bit cheaper for a while. And now maybe that's gone away.
It's kind of sad, like, with any subscription service in my life, like, if it gets raised, like, I'm subscribing because I like the service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They really have, like, total control. Unless like everybody quits at once, which doesn't gonna happen. It's not gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was such an uproar when Netflix went up what, $2 a month.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I don't want to say just like suck it up and deal with it. Like, price increases suck, but it's like, are you really gonna notice? Like, it went from like what, $9 to $11 a month,
something like that.
It's like, are you really gonna notice that price increase?
Yeah. I don't look down on anybody who steps away. If they look at it, just say no, I don't want to pay that anymore. That's the too much level. Sure, that's fine. And I've done that with streaming services for example.
I still think even $60 a year is a good deal for at least 12 free games that you're getting this year. It's usually more than that every month.
It's like three a month.
Yeah. Maybe 30 free games a year.
They have good free games.
Yeah, this month is going to be Journey. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. Yeah.
I think Jared's right that it has less to do with I can't afford that extra $2 and more to do with it puts it out of the range where it's worth it to you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll buy a $7 lunch, but I really don't like to buy a $10 lunch. And like, it's not that $3 makes a difference, but for me, I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their walk away point.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's true. Nick also provides us with our 20 questions suggestion this week, but you're gonna have to wait a little bit to get to that. Sneak preview, yeah.
I bet it's a PlayStation game.
Now, this week in Japan is just better. The 3DS in Japan is getting a complete Kunio-kun collection. You heard about this? From the Famicom. So all 11 Kunio Kun games.
Gandare Dunk Heroes?
Yes.
Oh, that game's so good.
All on one cartridge for the 3DS. The whole game is called Kunio Kun Neketsu Complete Famicom Series.
All right.
And for anyone who doesn't know, the Kunio Kun series includes River City Ransom.
Yeah, Crashing the Boys. So that's sort of the same. Yeah,
Super Dodgeball.
Yeah,
Super
it's
Dodgeball.
That series. Renegade. Renegade is part of that.
That game's
series.
Real bad.
What's the volleyball one called? Super Thief Slash.
Oh wait, no. Tecmo. Is that the same one? I don't know the volleyball one.
There's a volleyball one. Okay. The same thing.
And
World Cup Soccer.
Yeah. Let's just go back to talking about Gambare Dunk Heroes again, because that game's incredible.
Which one? Gambare Dunk Heroes?
Gambare Dunk Heroes.
So this is, I'm not seeing it on the list.
It's a very late Kunio game, and it is.
Are you sure it was on the Famicom?
It was on the Famicom. I used to own it. But it's a it's basketball with the River City Ransom guys, but like the goals are like 80 feet in the air, and there's three goals on each side, and you're beating the crap out of each other while playing basketball and like springboarding off the hoods of cars, and there's like. There's a team from, I think, NASA that have, like, super teleportation powers, and it's a great game.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
So this pack includes Renegade, the original, from 1987, Super Dodgeball, River City Ransom, Nintendo World Cup, which is their soccer hen.
That's the one. Nintendo, that came on the dual cart with the volleyball game.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
No, it doesn't. I don't know if it came in a dual cart, but it's in the PlayChoice machine I have. So
it did come in a dual cart with certain pack-in sets, but it's the soccer game that had the Kunio characters.
That's not very good. Super Dodgeball and River City Ransom are the games to play out of that.
Well, soccer one's
actually
pretty good.
There's also a bunch here that I don't think ever came out here in the West that may be good. I don't know. Like Downtown Neketsu Koshin Kyoku Soryoku Daiun Do Kai.
Okay, I believe that's River City Ransom 2. I might have the name wrong. There's one where they're having a school play and they're all dressed up as like period piece samurai guys and wandering around the Japanese countryside. It's all
series.
The characters from River City Ransom. It's still a huge sprawling brawler, but they're all dressed up like samurai dudes. It's great.
Maybe that one is Downtown Special Kunio-kun no Jidaigeki Dayo Zenin Shugo.
Oh, I might have had the wrong one.
Yeah, because Shoguns, yeah.
Or there's Ike Ike Neketsu Hakibu.
Yeah.
I guess there's a hockey
game.
I've
played the hockey game.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's Bikuri Neketsu Shinkiroku. That one's known as Crashing the Boys Street Challenge.
Yeah, I want to hear Damon. I want to hear Damon phonetically pronounce just Japanese words all day long.
We'll do that.
Damon, even though they got that and that sounds great, you know what we got this week? A 3DS with stars on it.
Yeah.
We did
it. It's
cool.
3DS. You like it?
What?
You're the only person I've heard said that they like it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to buy it, but I looked at it. I'm like, that looks neat.
Out of all the things, we've never got a Metroid console ever.
The final three are Neketsu Kakuto Densetsu, Kunio-kun no Neketsu Soccer League, and finally, Neketsu Street Basket Gambare Dunk Heroes.
Yeah! That's all good.
Sam, it's not like it's the 20th anniversary of Metroid.
No. No, it's not like a Metroid game just came out.
Oh, man. You know what would make a Metroid game better? Kunio-kun and his friends dressed as samurai.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what, Jared? There are basically super deformed little dudes in this new Metroid game. Doesn't make it better.
That's true. Too bad.
Yeah.
To hear that. Oh, man, I'd forgotten about Period Piece. And the hockey game I'd forgotten about, too. That's actually really good, too.
The Kunio-kun Complete Famicom series is coming out in Japan this winter. I don't think it's coming out here. I wouldn't hold your breath for that.
But we have a 3DS that's blue and has stars on it.
Yeah. Is the 3DS region locked? I forget.
It is.
I forget which systems are.
Yeah, 3DS is region locked.
Was software region locked?
It's software region locked.
Yeah. Oh.
What about that River City Ransom Underground? Yeah. Remember that was kickstarted and it was funded? But then I don't think it ever came out.
Yeah, I talked about that a few times. But
did that come out?
It's supposed to be a new River City Ransom game that we're getting, but it was
funded
in 2014.
There's also like a GBA River City Ransom, and there's a few River City Ransom games that are recent.
There's also a PC Engine one.
Super Dodgeball back on DS, I think.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
I think they did that.
That's the one that I'm most familiar with. Was that them, or just who made it?
Yeah, I think so. It was
Super Dodgeball was really fun.
Yeah, NES Super Dodgeball and Famicom Super Dodgeball both are beautiful.
Yeah, barf. They throw up. And each. I like the special attacks a lot, where the ball like stretches out and it gets all crazy. And,
yeah, oh, man.
That was a blast with two people. Like that was a great game for head to head.
Yeah, the frame rate is so bad, but it's really fun.
All right, our next email comes from Caleb Massey, and he wonders: are modern games too easy? He says, I'm currently enrolled in a game design course, and we are learning a bit about balancing and creating flow in games. Mm. In our text, there is a section about how games need to achieve the perfect balance so that players do not feel frustrated by the difficulty or bored by the lack of challenge. This brings me to two questions. One, Are games nowadays just too easy? I've heard Jonathan Blow say things about certain games not giving the player enough credit and holding their hand the whole time. That's his first question.
Okay.
So I'm tired of following things to waypoints to other waypoints to other waypoints.
Yeah.
That does tire me out.
We have a business interest in games being hard, so I just want to put that
true.
Out
that's
there.
That's true. We got to put that out there.
Full disclosure.
Yeah.
We're all from a guide's background, so when we write a strategy guide for a really hard game, it makes us really happy.
Yeah, it is. And I like hard games, although when you're trying to find the 299th collectible, that's a little frustrating.
That's the bad part about it.
But yeah, I mean,
but
no.
But fun for summer break, right? Well, if you just have one game.
You just put Brendan on it, and he'll say, found it.
Yep, he'll find it.
I don't wander around frustrating. Brendan's so good. He's so much better at his job than I am.
Probably the best video game player I've ever known, besides Billy Mitchell, who I don't know.
Yeah, so Brendan's amazing. But you get in, you know, I don't want to be dropped in a map and just be completely lost and frustrated, but you can do good level design that doesn't require waypointing. I got so tired of some of the Borderlands.
So we're talking about two separate things here. We're talking about the over-tutorialization of games, like the hand-holding and then games being too easy, which they can overlap, but they are separate.
I would say the hand-holding is generally like the first hour of a game, and then usually they let go. Right,
but that training first hour come off. They say,
that first hour is very hand-holdy.
Yep.
But video games are complex and complicated, and the controllers are intimidating if you're not us. You know, if you're someone that only plays a few games a year, and you pick up, you know, Dishonored 2 is coming out soon. Like that'll be a hugely complex game to someone that's not immersed in the vocabulary and lingo of video games.
Absolutely. So yeah, maybe it depends on the game. There's some easy games that are great. I love Kirby games. They're usually very easy, but they're generally also very well put together and a lot of fun. And some games thrive on their difficulty. So you have Dark Souls being the classic contemporary example. Difficulty and the fact that it doesn't handhold you pretty much at all and remains ambiguous is what gives that game its distinct character that people go to it for.
Well, okay, I think it's pretty clear that games used to be a lot harder, right? If you go back to 8 and 16-bit games, right?
Yeah, I don't know if we play the majority of games. Like back then, it was possible to see every game and what it is. But it was probably a lot of hard, like just terrible iPhone games, and I don't know.
Well, we can fire up your NES and put it in Bionic Commando, and isn't that harder than your average game today?
I have a pet peeve about people that romanticize the difficulty of old games. Old games had to be difficult because that's what made them long. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think we've talked about this on Scoop before, but like Castlevania, if you play through Castlevania, that game is 25 minutes long, maybe. But it feels like this massive adventure.
And even before that, in the arcades, the odds were stacked against you because they wanted you to put more quarters in.
So it's like the games were short, and so to make a game feel valuable, to make it feel like you got your money's worth, it had to be incredibly hard. And now they have other ways to make you feel like you got your money worth, you know, either through multiplayer, production values, or they're just able to make a game.
Romance scenes?
Yeah.
Golgo 13.
Scenes. No, they're just able to make
I know, but in old games we have
you can make a game that lasts a week or two, you know, or longer without having to, you know, fall back on the crutch of difficulty to do that.
Now, I agree with you there, Justin, but I want to take that another step. Even then, there was a line of distinction between games that were hard in cheap ways and were very frustrating, and games that were hard.
Ghosts and Goblins.
And then games that were superbly designed and hard. I mean, you mentioned Castlevania. That game is very difficult, but it's very rarely impossible. There's a way around it.
And I don't know if I'm thinking about that.
Grim Reaper, Jared.
Ninja Gaiden is cheap as hell, and that's still considered a classic.
But there is a perfect route there. I think what
nobody
was
beat
evil
Ninja Gaiden. No.
Ninja Gaiden changed the rules at stage 6 and sent you back to it. That was what made it awful. But yeah, all that said, there were some real bona fide situations where you look at something like Mega Man, for example, or you mentioned Bionic Commando, where the game, it's tough as nails, but you can get really good at it, and it's not just muscle memory.
Can we all just agree that games need to just have cheat codes again?
Yeah.
Those are so fun.
Oh, you pay
for
those.
It's so fun. Yeah. No. It's so fun after you beat a game to just mess with it.
God bless Rockstar
for
putting button codes in GTA 5.
I love that.
I do too.
And it's like you could make a game really hard and then just disable achievements, do whatever you want. Like, I love that stuff.
That's why I'm very excited for, although it's exactly what you just said, something you have to pay for, the original classic Lara Croft skin for Rise of the Tomb Raider that's coming out later this year.
That so looks really eerie.
It's going to be hilarious.
When she's sitting across a campfire and talking to somebody at an intimate moment, it's like...
That would have been, you know, 10, 20 years ago, something that you unlocked in the game. Now you have to pay for it, which is obnoxious, but I'm still excited to check it out.
A contemporary game that strikes out, and your perfect balance on this, between old game design principles and the way a modern game, like Justin was talking about, might flow and have more content, I think, is Shovel Knight, where you have a very you have an 8-bit difficulty that's tuned to not be just extraordinarily frustrating, and you have just a ton of content, a long quest with all kinds of diverse, interesting levels, and then DLC packs, a lot of which are free, that add, you know, you play through the whole game as a different character, or you have dozens of cheat and button codes that change things up. That's a great example. If you haven't played that game, shame on you. Go play it.
I like how difficulty, real high-level difficulty in like a 2D platform thing, just to keep it locked there, has become a feature that's like sells games to certain communities, and like Super Meat Boy and M Plus, like when those games were coming out, like in Super Meat Boy, you could see all the deaths you had, and M Plus, you could restart so fast and just go through your same route. Like they really emphasize this kind of 2D evilness.
Well, yeah, like but, 5 seconds of perfection, like is all you really need to put together to be a level. You can do things like I don't consider myself a super great video game player, but I got through all of Super Meat Boy. Because like, if you were to see the run with the deaths taken out, it would make me look like a god. But I really only needed to perfect that 4 seconds, you know, to get to the next stage.
And then there's some games that are just more fun when they're easy. Red Faction Guerrilla comes to mind immediately. I don't want to play that game on hard. I want to play that game on easy with my big old hammer and knock things down. And, yeah, and it's more fun that way. I think it just depends on the game.
If you want difficulty, you know, there's multiplayer and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are slideable difficulty levels.
But. Call of Duty multiplayer is very difficult for me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know. I tend to make, like, if you make a game too easy, you know, you might frustrate some really hardcore players, but if you make a game too hard, you know, then you've made it so 2/3 of your audience are never even going to see what you made. Like, that's the bigger sin.
Yeah.
Harder, too hard is a bigger sin than too easy for me.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. How funny was it that with hard games back in the day, the big thing that would, like, limit me, at least, from liking them would be, like, why did I just run out of continues? And that was like a big, big deal back then. It was like either lives or continues. But like if a game like, you know, set you back to square one, like the beginning of the game after like trying something, that's what makes Meat Boy and stuff really nice is that you just try over
you
and over again.
You can just keep going,
That's when the heart came out of the NES. But like you did not have that luxury back then. Like even if you had lives, you could build up lives. If you ran out of those, you may have two continues. If then you ran out of those, like that tier doesn't exist anymore.
Ninja Gaiden 3, man. Just why you would limit the number of continues. And the answer, we think, is the Japanese version didn't do that. So it was probably for the US rental market to make it harder. So you couldn't beat it on one.
That.
Yeah, because they took it, they added rental. That. They made it harder for the rental. Oh, that's irritating.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, game rental places are like gone entirely.
You got them red boxes, though.
Red box gameplay, I guess.
Yeah, gameplay still around.
Or going to the rental store on Friday night.
You can just watch a video game on YouTube now.
Parents would get like a movie for the weekend or something, and I'd pick out a game and just play it all weekend. It was the best feeling. I love that so much. Yep. I missed that.
I totally miss that.
I rented games at Family Video, I think, as recently as like 2013.
We had a place in Iowa City called That's Rentertainment.
Yeah.
Whoa!
That's awesome!
Is it still around?
Because you knew, I think I talked to you about it because you went to college there.
So yeah, from Iowa City, yeah. It was still around as of a few years ago. I don't know if it's still there.
So cool. They had a great Nintendo selection.
Yeah.
I think there are more people playing games today than ever. Games are selling more than ever. Games are more popular than ever. So I think that developers were able to figure out that by being a little bit friendlier to the player, they can welcome more people in, bring more people in the fold. So I think overall it's been healthy.
Yeah, and storytelling has become a big part of it, so they want you kind of just to see the end.
Yeah.
See what the story is.
And once you're in there, once you're in the gaming space, if you want a hard game, you can totally find it.
Yeah.
There's still plenty of hard games being made. They're just not the AAA blockbusters.
But there is so much of it, sometimes it feels like padding. That's where, that's the other sin, man. I hate it when I'm just like, this doesn't need to be here. It offends the editor in me.
Well, there's also, there doesn't need to be, because, you know, The Witness is one of my favorite games in years, and it doesn't have this. But when there's no sort of pressure release valve, or like in case of emergency break glass button, like if you're just like, you're stuck, and then you're just stuck friggin' forever.
That's when IGN Guides comes to your
house. That's right.
But that, like, that sucks. Like, well, I can't beat this guy. Like, I guess I'm just done. Like, you can.
Was worse when it was an adventure game back in the day.
Yeah.
And, like, you just couldn't figure out how to get the mouse and the soda can and the clothespin.
Or
you
screwed yourself 2 hours ago and didn't know it.
And didn't know it. You're sitting there trying to figure things out, and the piece of glass you need is locked behind a door.
So maybe I shouldn't even use beating a boss as an example, because you could presumably practice. But if it's a puzzle game and you don't know what you're supposed to do, and there's no hint system or no nothing like that, I don't know. That doesn't
brutal.
I do think the internet has changed the way games are designed, because there are people who go and look for things like that.
Yeah. Ever since the the first internet usage I ever did was looking at Mortal Kombat cheat codes.
Yeah, I went to N64.com, which would become IGN64.com, to look up the Super Mario 64 Start Guide.
Yeah,
that wasn't the very first thing I did, but it was early.
That was my first introduction to IGN, or what would become IGN. Hmm. We've actually addressed Caleb's second question. He was asking, what are some of the most difficult games you've ever played, and have you finished them? Oof. We talked about Ghosts and Goblins, for sure. I've never
even Jared says he can beat it.
Because yeah, you can beat Ghosts and Goblins.
I said you could. Beat it.
Yeah, I can. I'm pretty good at Ghosts and Goblins.
I like that. We're gonna have to. We have in the office.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty
with
good
the
at
manual in case.
Yeah, it'll take a while, but I'll right. That's nice. And Ghosts and Goblins gives you unlimited continues. You can brute force your way through Ghosts.
I'm impressed, man. I could never beat that game.
There's this pretty cool subculture of, like, I don't know whether they have a name, but like these masochistic 2D platformers. People stream them a lot on Twitch. Games like I Want to Be the Guy and things of that nature. That are just, like, they're so over the top, like, deliberately mean and unfair, and, like, there's no logic to it. You'll hit a block and die, or just random stuff happens. And they're fun to watch, not so fun to play, and they're really active in the speedrunning scene and just the live streaming scene, and it's a thing. I dunk my head into that scene once a year and just watch the insanity and then, like, sort of jump back out. Well, I would never participate.
Those crazy Mario Maker levels that people were making and beating, that was really
stuff
exciting.
Like that.
What makes I Want to Be the Guy great is that it's funny. Like, the ways you die are hilarious. You know, you run under a tree and an apple falls down on you and you die. And the next time you jump over the tree and, like, an apple falls up and kills you. Like, it's just it's adorable. Or you're facing Dracula from the end of Symphony of the Night and he starts doing, you know, the "What is a man?" speech. But when he throws the champagne glass, you're standing in precisely the spot it's going to land.
And it kills
you. And if you don't know to move, it just kills you. It's delightful.
It's pretty good.
The answer is a miserable pile of secrets.
Ah, that's what a man is? Mm-hmm. How about you?
I bought that game on the Xbox 360 because it's my second favorite game of all time. I wanted to replay it. They changed the voice acting.
Oh, really?
Is it all Nolan North now?
It's like what they did with Resident Evil.
Well, maybe you can toggle it. There's a version of that with re-recorded English lines that was released in this country.
Whoa.
I want the original terrible dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next email comes from Brandon Hamilton. He says,
did he make the hit Broadway musical?
No, not that one.
Oh.
Well, you don't know.
I'm pretty sure. He says, hey, everyone. I've been a fan for a while, and I would like your expert opinions. Mm-hmm. I've never been into JRPGs for various reasons, but I would like to give them another shot, seeing as how I know I've missed many classics over the years.
Yeah.
Is the newly delayed Final Fantasy XV a good place to start, or should I start elsewhere?
Yeah, you should start elsewhere. Well, first of all, the genre's not that great. You should probably just not bother.
Now, come on. Let's entertain our friend Brandon.
No, I mean,
first of all, he says JRPGs have never clicked with them.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to change now if we tell him even some of the best examples.
I
want to
hear
the genre.
Jared's take on this first.
No, okay, so 15, I mean, we've only played a little bit of it. We've only played a little bit of it.
Don't go off. He's a JRPG fan.
I know, but like,
I won't go off here. I'll be brief. 15, we don't know enough about to give you an answer as to whether or not it's the place to start.
The action-oriented combat could potentially be a fit, but who knows how good it all came together.
Yeah, go play Chrono Trigger. Start there. If you like what you see in Chrono Trigger, you're going to find other JRPGs you enjoy. Go play Suikoden 2.
Chrono Trigger is easily accessible on DS.
Yep, DS.
That's a good version.
Wii Virtual
really
Console.
Good version.
Yeah, the DS version is the best version, and Wii Virtual Console. The other one, Suikoden 2, which is available on PSN. Those two
I haven't played that game.
Those two are beautiful.
Really? You can go back and play it?
Yeah, it's on PSN.
Dude, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and you should. It's so good.
I mean, awesome. I was being flippant before. I played dozens and dozens of JRPGs. But so here's my thing about them is, with a few exceptions, the combat systems are almost always so repetitive and slow. Like, that genre has moved on, or maybe hasn't moved on, or maybe Final Fantasy XV is its kind of final form. But if you go back and play even a classic like Chrono Trigger, you're going to get into battle and do the same thing, hundreds and hundreds of times.
But in Chrono Trigger, it's quick, and you always have one or two decisions to make in the middle that matter.
I don't agree with that at all. Not in, like, trash mobs. There's no decisions to make. And the same with, like, Final Fantasy VI or VII or VIII or IX or any of these classics. Like, you'll face off against trash mobs.
I disagree.
You'll do the same basic attacks and the same basic magic.
But we're not trying to convince Brandon not to try JRPGs.
Yeah, but if they haven't clicked with him, I'm just saying. Like,
he wants to try again, and we're just recommending some good ones to
And Suikoden 2, never guilty of that sin, both because of the way you can set your party up and that two-rank system and the fact that all battles last, like, like 45 seconds.
I am a massive fan of Suikoden 2. And like I said, I'm mainly being flippant. Like, I would say Grandia. Like, that would be my recommendation. Because that's a game that truly does fix that. It's got the greatest battle system of any JRPG of all
time. What's the best way to play Grandia today?
Is there a Steam port?
I don't know.
That's a good question. I think it's on PS4. I'm actually not sure, man. I'd love to play Grandia again. I'm not sure where you can play it today, but greatest JRPG battle system of all time. Great hybrid of turn-based and real-time battles.
But even 15's demos, at least, are somewhat guilty of what you're talking about. I mean, they're very fluid and very fun, but you are repeating a lot of the same actions. And so repetition is a part of RPG playing of any kind, whether it be Western or JRPGs. A lot of RPGs are about how you set up before you go into the battle. It's about optimizing, and then you build the machine, then you watch it run. Even in the action RPG combat of 15, you see some of that in the demos.
That's why I like 13, or not 13 so much, 12 so much.
Oh, because you're...
Final Fantasy 12.
12's brilliant. The story has... It's
problems,
but it's a lot of fun.
Don't recommend 12.
Yeah,
no, 12 is the best.
What about Tactics? Do you guys recommend that?
Well, okay. So I love Final Fantasy Tactics. I love strategy RPGs. However, I don't consider them in the same genre.
Me neither.
Yeah, Final Fantasy Tactics has such a good story that I like to think of it as a role-playing game, and Tactics Ogre Let Us Cling Together on the Vita is the best tactics game you can play.
I mean, yeah, I love those games too, but like, it's not the same thing as a Final Fantasy VII.
So that's
but
my
there's
thing,
still great is, stories like, in the Japanese.
Justin's problem with JRPGs is totally fixed by tactics games because the battle is so deep and involved and engaging
and
fun.
To me, I mean, and again, I'm a bias because I'm more of a systems guy than a story guy. If I want a great story, I'll read a great book. I play video games for the interaction and trying to figure out like, hey, what can I, if I put a time mage in my party, what's that going to do for me? And so that's why tactics games are, you know, perfect. They solve all those problems. You're not doing the same thing over and over again, and it is a different, unique challenge every time.
I like tactics games for that reason as well.
Disgaea, I love figuring out ways to break these games.
Disgaea is really good. Another one
to
throw out there.
You didn't even have to wait for Daemon Dimension.
Yeah.
Yeah, another one to throw out, because we're throwing out a couple of really old games. Something more contemporary, Persona 4 Golden.
I was going to say Persona 4 Golden on Vita is the highest rated Vita game.
Mm-hmm. For a good reason. That's an extraordinary, and that is a 100-hour video game. I mean, you're gonna get some role playing done there.
Don't go straight to Earthbound.
Well, I was gonna suggest Earthbound.
No
you don't
way.
Think so?
Game's really boring now.
Really boring now.
I really like Earthbound, but I feel like you need something else to get your feet wet.
So slow, and you have to fight things so often. Yeah. It's just fight.
There's
fight,
a lot of combat.
Fight.
Yeah.
Chrono Trigger. I've played both those recently for the first time, and by recently I mean like the last 7 or 8 years. Mm. And Chrono Trigger is so much better. It's so fun.
They are great games.
The thing I like about JRPG games is that you get to collect a lot of stuff, and you get to obsess over a couple different character loadouts, and then go in and try those in big battles. And the battles in the games I like have really cool monster designs. And I think that's one of the coolest things about the Final Fantasy Chrono Trigger Square oeuvre is that they have really, really cool monster designs.
Okay.
That's really
just said oeuvre. That's awesome.
Yeah.
There's a total level to enjoy these games, just like the really awesome sprite art and music. And you can get a level of enjoyment out of them even with some of the stuff I was complaining about earlier. That's super legitimate.
While we're on that, I mean, it's not from Japan, but Undertale is inspired by JRPGs and another very kind of condensed way to get into the genre.
Undertale's become such a meme, or I don't know, it's taken on a life of its own, but if you get back to the actual video game itself, it's so clever and smart and good.
Yeah.
A few others I wanted to mention. What about the original Mario RPG?
Don't play that anymore, not unless
Mario
you're a fan
and Luigi.
Of the genre.
It has a lot of filler. I agree with the Mario and Luigi games. I think are too slow too. I mean, maybe if you're a younger person and haven't played them, then I think they'll be much better.
I think they're better. I think Paper Mario is a slow one. Mario and Luigi, I've always liked the humor and sort of subversive nature of them, and the more action.
Yeah, I hear Bowser's Inside Story is really good.
Bowser's Inside Story is a lot of fun. The most recent one that was the crossover with Paper Mario is not good. Don't play that one.
Is it more Paper Mario or more Mario and Luigi?
The new one is more Mario and Luigi, and it has an incredible combat system. But the rest of the game's awful.
You could also just start at Final Fantasy I, work your way up.
Well, I was going to say...
Game's great.
I have such a soft spot for Final Fantasy.
If Brandon wanted to try Final Fantasy, I would probably recommend Final Fantasy IX. That's on PS1 Classics.
Nine's my favorite.
I like 9 a lot.
Nine's 3D and Final Fantasy don't mix.
Easy to play.
9 is fun. 6 is interesting because it's so big and sweeping and epic. 4 is odd because it's short. That's the one thing I like about 4 is that you can finish 4 in like 12 hours. It's going to feel old. There's some anachronisms in there, and you're like, man, this game feels old. But it's also like you can play it in a day. And that's kind of
those dolls are so hard though.
Yeah.
That's
the part you get stuck
I like at. Blocked that out. God, they're the worst.
A recent JRPG that people tend to overlook, but could be a friendlier JRPG experience for Brandon is Ni no Kuni PS3. Yeah.
If you're gonna play a 3D one, that one holds up because the graphics are so cel shaded and nice.
Like that's an example of a game. Like I wanted to like it. I thought it was gorgeous, and I could tell that the story and the setting was all very heartfelt. Mm-hmm. But I got bored of those battles, man. Like JRPG battles, it's hard for me to do in 2016.
Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon's a good one.
As far as JRPG goes, I mean, like that's a great entry point. They're super fun. They have little monsters. Great monster design.
Oh, two more good ones. Dragon Quest V, which you can find for DS and works on your 3DS.
It's on iOS as well.
Yeah, on iOS as well. Dragon Quest IX, which is different. 5 is a story-based, 9 systemic-based. Both are very good.
Is 5 one where it goes through the entire life of a man?
Yeah. Yeah, and 5 is the one where I love 5. In the first 30 minutes, they're like, so a fortune teller's like, you are not the hero of the story. I thought you were, but you're not. And they stick to it. And I love that. It's great.
So now you've had Dragon Quest V spoiled for you.
No, it's like the first few minutes.
Where can you play Dragon Quest IX?
You can also play that on DS and 3DS compatible. Yeah, 5 and 9.
Because I was going to say, Dragon Quest VIII is coming to 3DS soon.
Mm-hmm.
That just seems, that's confusing.
And 7's coming to
3DS. 7 just came, yeah, 7's coming out before that.
And but 5 and 9 are both DS games, both fantastic. Good. And there's so many great RPGs. Another one, The World Ends With You, is a fun one.
That's another. Come on.
I kind of like.
See, people really liked that at the time, but I don't think it's
the spiky hair is just way.
It's
too
not
much.
A classic, but it's.
Do you
different.
Guys recommend Kingdom Hearts games at all? I never played.
I don't like Kingdom
it's
Hearts.
It's hard to go back to Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah. All right, moving on. This is Piyush. Piyush.
Piyush.
He says, "I love you all."
Oh,
we love you too.
Keep up the good work.
Well, I don't know him.
Yeah, he probably doesn't mean me because I haven't been on in a while.
He says, "You know how the safest favorite movie is The Shawshank Redemption." I want to know what is the safest favorite 2D and 3D video game.
That's a good question.
Safest favorite console. Now, first of all, I've never heard this idea that The Shawshank Redemption is the safest favorite movie. I don't know what that means.
Not in an offensive way, but like that's kind of a bro favorite movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fine. Friend with lots of bros. I like that movie.
I like that movie.
I adore that movie.
What is it? I don't know what that means. It's the safest. Like you're,
it's a safe pick.
No one's going to disagree with you.
Like it's borderline critically acclaimed.
It
and
is
then also
borderline
like,
critically acclaimed.
Well, but it didn't win an Academy Award.
No, you're right. I was agreeing with you.
Yeah. So it's,
I loved it at the time.
And then, like, so you can say it, and also it's like really fun to watch.
As I think I've grown as a movie watcher, movie fan, I think it's going to be a little sentimental and heavy-handed.
Totally.
But yeah. Mm-hmm.
I adore it, but I definitely see what he's talking about, and it's a popular pick on lists.
So he doesn't want us to talk about Shawshank Redemption.
No, so we're talking about
the safest.
Well, but that's
best
like
2D game would be like Super Mario Brothers, right?
Mario Brothers is or Super Mario World, Super Mario 3, World. Super Mario Brothers. Those
are the three
come
that come up. Tetris,
Link to the Past.
And then a 3D game would be Ocarina of Time, or
I think it's a little different.
Ocarina of Time,
I think Ocarina of Time is maybe a better example. Where like, is that game truly the greatest ever? Maybe not. But if anyone says that it's their favorite or the greatest, you're not going to get too much pushback from anybody. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, Ocarina comes to mind.
Half-Life 2.
Yeah, Mario 64 maybe.
It is a little bit weirder question in the video.
If you look
game
at our
space.
Top 10 games on our top 100 list, I bet those are kind of the same.
Well,
I was just looking at them the other
the
day.
The safer choice,
but
you
Doom
know,
was on there. That's not a safe.
I think it is a safe choice.
I think the bigger cop out was when we did the top 125 Nintendo games. Mm. You know, and I'll be critical of myself here. We put Super Mario Brothers as number one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a safer.
That's like the safer.
Like, is that truly like the greatest Nintendo against, game ever made?
Well, it was the greatest leap. I mean, I see if you're talking about greatest in the sense of critical, like you. Do with Shawshank, if you're looking and saying, hey, this is like a Citizen Kane type situation, there is before Super Mario and there is after. And I think I said this
changed
before,
everything.
It is like Super Mario Brothers. When you first played that game, if you'd been playing video games and you played that, it was like it came down from outer space. It was impossible. The scale and beauty and scope and music and controls of Super Mario Brothers were unprecedented and unthinkable. It was just like, this is what a game from like the year 2000 should feel like when you were
playing. That's how
that.
We felt when we saw the movie Joysticks.
Yeah.
Totally awesome video games.
Totally awesome video games.
So that's why I think Super Mario Bros.
Totally
is a
awesome
safe
video games. Piyush
thinks that Uncharted 2 is the safest favorite 3D video game.
Mm.
Really?
It's very good. I don't know if it's the safest.
You hear that all the time as like top list for like contemporary games.
Portal, totally. I mean,
maybe,
Portal 2.
Yeah, or maybe like Half-Life 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I would probably argue against a game more like Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
But Journey's another one, right? You hear that a lot.
Oh. Yeah, but
I mean, you don't have to agree with it. I'm just saying that's what people tell me.
Yeah, you get the group of narrow-minded gamers that talk shit on indie games wouldn't accept your Journey choice.
So. Gotcha. Mm.
Metal Gear Solid's probably another one that's pretty popular with people.
Is it a safe choice? But yeah, then there's like the 2 and 3 argument, right? If people go back and forth.
Yeah,
that's why I don't think Uncharted 2 quite makes that cut. It's because people do argue about 2 or 3.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like 2 better.
Me too.
I like 3. I like 4 a lot now, though.
I love 4.
Holy crap, yeah, 4 is really so good. Fun.
It is 1:22. You tell me if you think you can accomplish.
We've been here all night.
Can we do a
video game 20 questions?
Okay, but we got to do a speed run. We're gonna play with our guts and not our brains.
We're going to lose again.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lose to you guys. Like that last week one was so embarrassing.
That was really bad.
Friday the 13th was last week.
It's a game we talk about and play all the time.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, it's really unconscionable.
All right, let's go. Right. Justin can play with this.
If you remember back to our first question, this week's suggestion comes from our friend Nick.
All right.
Let the questioning begin.
Do you wear a hat?
No.
Was this game released after January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Was it on a PlayStation system?
What do you mean, like ever?
Was it a PlayStation exclusive?
No.
Okay.
Is this game for the Xbox One PS4 generation?
Are you asking if it's available to play on that generation?
Was it initially released for this generation?
No.
Is this a licensed game?
No.
Cool. Is it the PS3 era? Same question as Justin.
Yeah. Was it originally released during that era? Yes.
Okay.
So Wii, Xbox 360, PS3.
Yeah. In multi-platform game.
Yeah.
Not a licensed game.
Okay. Not a licensed game. Yeah.
Was this what we would generally consider a big, you know, $60 game?
No.
Ah, interesting. Mm. Is this game
N plus?
Yeah. Was this game was this game 2D side scroll?
No.
Okay.
Downloadable game. That was good. I'm glad I asked.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Do we need to narrow it down to a console?
We know it was multi-platform.
Yeah.
So
I'm just wondering if it was Wii.
It could be a Wii downloadable. There's a few of those.
Yeah, there's a few of those.
But we also know we know it did appear on a Sony platform, but mm-hmm. not exclusively.
So are there sequels to this game?
No.
No sequel.
But it's been ported, or it's available on Castle Crashers. Systems.
Oh, that's a good thought. But that's 2D. Well, it's isometric.
But it's not 2D side-scrolling.
Yeah, it's isometric.
I mean, I want to narrow down. We know it's a downloadable game from that era that was multi-platform, so not, you know, Shadow Complex or any of the exclusives, although that did eventually get ported, finally. Yeah. But something in that world.
Mm-hmm. Wait, it's 2D?
No, it's not 2D side-scrolling.
Right, but I mean, it's a downloadable game. That's such a big clue, and I'm just trying to think of games like that.
You're right. I totally agree with you.
Is it a third-person game?
Can you see your character on screen?
Yes,
you can see your character.
That's 10.
That's 10. All right, you can see your character. All right, and you're not wearing a hat.
Maybe it's not Castle Crashers. They're wearing little hats.
They're wearing little hats, yeah. So it's not Castle Crashers. Okay. So you can see your character
or
on
Battle
screen.
Block Theater.
Are you playing a human?
Yes.
All right, you're a human. So there we got that.
Do you shoot stuff?
Yes.
Playing a human, you shoot stuff.
And from you can see your character. See your character was such a good clue because that eliminates anything first person as well.
Yep.
It's not a side scroller. It's a 3D third person shooter, but. I guess it could be a side scroller too, based on the look we just got from David.
No, it would. No, I just asked.
No, but we don't know. I'm picturing like an isometric.
Do you need to clarify something, Damon?
I don't need to clarify something.
Okay. I think
you guys have a lot of information available to you.
No, but I've been picturing something. I've been picturing like an isometric, like smaller game, but it's probably a 3D third person game.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not Journey because you don't shoot stuff.
Yeah, I was picturing the wrong thing, but it's probably something closer to Journey.
You play as a person.
Okay. There's no shooting stuff. You're shooting feelings everywhere.
We could ask
in
about
Journey.
Multiplayer versus single player or something like that. We could ask about.
Is it a sci-fi or is it set in the future?
I think that's unclear. Give you a freebie on that one.
Ooh, unclear.
Mm. Could it be like Bastion or something like that?
Could you
shoot in those games?
What was that game where you would warp into people and explode them?
Oh yeah.
Where you played, you don't play as a human, you play as a little alien, never mind.
Explosion Man.
Awesome. There was Explosion Man.
Yep. What was the, oh man.
This is tough, because I don't know this era. I mean, I played everything in it. We could ask you Commander Rearm, Braid. Oh, yeah. Did we rate this game highly?
Yes.
Ah, okay, we rated the game highly. That's good to know. Highly rated from the era, downloadable title, probably multi-platform.
Like we know it's 3D.
Downloadable.
And it's an indie game, huh? It's very strange.
We don't know it's indie, but we know it's not a big $60 retail release. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we know we really like it.
It's not
it.
In the future.
So I'm trying to think, like, the highest rated games, though, we've, like, so it can't be Braid, it can't be, you know, Explosion Man, it can't be stuff like Pac-Man Champion Edition, mm-hmm. you know, but those were the big AAA downloadable games of the era. What were other, like, Summer of Arcade or the PSN equivalent of Summer of Arcade releases?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about those. It's not Geo Wars, it's not...
Geometry Wars too. God, that game was so good.
It was. That was a really good game. All right, we could ask about enemies, we could ask about setting, we could ask about...
Oh boy.
All right.
I'm worried about those consoles, because if it was on PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, that means a lot. But do we know that it wasn't, you know, also on Wii? And maybe
you could ask Wii, if it was on Wii.
But we know it was on the PlayStation console.
I thought he said it didn't
just not
appear.
Exclusively. Why are we so mixed up on this? We said
you asked, was it a PlayStation exclusive at release? And I said no.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
So it wasn't a PlayStation exclusive at
But
release.
Then it did come to PlayStation.
Yeah. We're hitting that black hole.
My answer does not tell you that it came to PlayStation. Just,
I mean, I played
just
a lot
to be
of these.
So many so many games.
These were the kinds of games I was playing.
We also don't know that it's a console game. We just asked if it's from that era.
It's from that era, that's true.
What would narrow this down more?
Well, we know it's downloaded. It wasn't a retail game.
Just the genre or the...
Are you shooting guns? Using guns?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought we asked that already.
No, we asked if you shoot things.
If you're shooting things with guns.
Mm-hmm. So it's military-ish.
Should we ask about, like, saving?
Not licensed. There's no sequel. We're back to that again. The fact that there's no sequel is hurts my brain. Let's see.
Just clarify.
He's like making sure there's not a sequel.
Just clarify something. I know there's not a sequel.
Okay. I mean, we said Shadow Complex earlier. I said 2D side-scrolling. Technically, you shoot into the background of
Shadow Complex. Counts as 2D.
Okay.
You only traverse on a 2D plane.
Yeah, you shoot in the background, but you only traverse 2D. That's true. Because that was coming out this week.
Do you want to narrate? Did this appear on a Nintendo platform?
No.
Okay, so it was never on Wii or DS.
That's 15.
Okay. Right,
we're going the wrong way with our questions here. We're doing the graspy thing. Nail this down.
You play as a human.
What about Hotline Miami type stuff?
Well, we've had done Hotline Miami, but yeah, that's a great... I mean, we could ask if it's top-down.
Or Double Fine games?
Huh?
Like anything Double Fine?
Yeah. Is this game what people would consider super violent?
Super violent?
Is it rated M?
No.
Okay, it's not rated M. All right, so nothing like that.
Sorry.
Oh, wait a minute. I have a thought. What about I made a game with zombies in it?
I mean, maybe. I don't think Damon's likely to pick a game like that.
But he didn't pick the game.
What about a game that has zombies?
That's a game where you shoot guns.
I picked the suggestion.
I was thinking about top-down twin-stick shooters that came out in that era.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some like...
We could ask if it's top-down. I mean, that would be...
Is it a top-down game?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Cool. Okay. So kind of like behind your character, running around, shooting.
That would be top down. I mean,
let me ask you a question. Take it back. Would you consider an isometric game to be top down?
No.
Right on the edge. Yeah.
That's why I was having trouble answering that.
I don't know what isometric games came out in that era.
Is there an isometric game then?
Well, there is Tomb Raider. There was the downloadable Tomb Raider.
There was that.
For sure.
But it got a sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, it got a sequel.
And it's got no sequels.
What about Bastion?
Does Bastion have guns?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bastion has guns.
It's a whole gun.
It's unclear whether it's in the future. It's asymmetric.
Did this game have... Is it notable for its art?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That could be...
Does it have...
You have two questions left.
Does it have a narrator narrating your every move?
Yes.
Yeah! Is it Bastion?
Oh, 20 questions.
Woo! You got
there.
Nicely done.
Right at the end, yeah, because you mentioned that
a while ago, yeah,
several like, questions ago, and I was like, you've got everything.
Yeah.
Was like this
we did it.
That was a dumb question.
Bastion.
That was a cool game. Fez was such a cool game. I always remember that one.
I thought you guys might get hung up. That game never came to PS3, I don't think, but it is on PS4.
I mean, it came to a million different. I mean, it eventually came out on mobile and everywhere else.
It was originally only on 360, then it came to PC, mobile, PS4, and Vita.
All right. Whew.
2011. Developed by Supergiant.
I barely remember shooting in that game. I just remember doing everything else.
But yeah, I used the arrow.
Sam, your clutch.
Yeah, there's
clutch.
Like there's a bunch of different weapons available. In that
yeah,
game.
I so didn't choose these guns. I didn't remember shooting either. That was the.
I shot a lot.
Okay. Published by Warner Brothers.
Huh.
Fun fact on that one.
Yeah. Probably after the fact.
Cool. All right, that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Damon.
My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Good morning, California. Let's turn the servers on. Let's drive and check the chatter. Let's all just sing along. We're flying high. It's passing us by. Reach out to me if you still believe.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.